The number that you have on that is 168 staff, but we've been going through further processes of refining the total staff complement. So we are probably
The staff complement is the vacant service. Not necessarily gender or those ones that the follow committee was doing. And I would like to welcome the minister and the chairperson of the portfolio committee if she can come further for the role that you want us, that you want to play. Thank you very much. Continue, please.
Well, if you go back, that's what I was going to talk to you as well. If you go back to the slide, on this slide, if you see the vacancy rate, gendered at about, I would tell you on this the other area that you asked for details is how do we manage the transfer payments and make sure that the money is used for the item value fund. Invariably, when an SOE requires recapitalization, there are often conditions that are set by the Minister of Finance, which our minister has to concur with. And basically, these become then the guidelines under which we would provide oversight at each point when the transfer payment is undertaken. And we often, for example, in the case of SAA, there is a joint committee which is made up of DPE and the National Treasury, which will review performance on a monthly basis, so that we are all on side. In the case of PDMR, fundamentally the same exercise, where we review performance and before we pay, we make the transfer payment, the general agreement, the services in there. Within the department as well, because at the end of the day, performance monitoring for the SOEs is a function of both the individual level of all of the managers that we recruited to make sure that in the performance management system, there's quite a close tie to exactly what it is that we're supposed to do that ties up to the reviews of the SOEs. And making sure that when transfer payments are made, they're made in line with the achieved. At the project level, we have a budget for this meeting, and we've also established a system for project management, which ensures that we are actually able to check on a regular basis and up to date where we are with virtually all of our projects. And at the submission level, all of the SOEs have to submit a quarterly report. Some of them have to submit monthly reports, which we will assess on a regular basis. And then we would then make recommendations to the minister on sometimes to write to the board and sometimes to make some changes. Some changes are necessary. With respect to SOEs, this is governed by the CSMA, where corporate plans have been submitted every year in February. Borrowing programs are also submitted to the department. Virtually every single SOE that the CSMA has now signed the shareholder compact, which indicates key performance areas. On a quarterly basis, the performance of the SOE is measured against the key performance indicators, which are in the compact. We've also, this is a system which we will try also to introduce to get a little bit more real-time information around SOE performance. It's what we call an SOE dashboard. Its best functionality at this point is to monitor the investment program of ESCOM and Transnet. So on a quarterly basis, you know exactly how far ESCOM is and its full program as well as Transnet and how much money is spent on the program. So we have a sense of what's attached to that. With that, Madam Chair, that's covered by the board of assessment with the minister. And then with the minister, yeah, this is then go back to the policy, sort of my fundamental question that you have today. I will also come back to you in the day around what's the policy today.
Thanks, Lucy. What you are going to do, Minister? I'm going to give members the opportunity to ask questions and where that needs for policy responses. We'll take this question, but I want to give members more chance to interact with the department. So can I?
Mr. Chair, just to apologize, I should have been here at 9, but I'm afraid I had appointments and went far longer than I intended. I'm really sorry, thank you for
and the DG had already apologized on, this, on your behalf. Members, let's take questions. Honorable Dambuza, I'll take down the other names while you are speaking. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and also to the DG for their presentation. And I also would like to thank the minister, because whenever we have such gatherings, he is always with us, so we appreciate his support. Chairperson, my question is around the issue of violence laid down by the on this document of the MCPS. Chairperson, I would like to know from the department the issue of how do they consider the issue of violence, because I observed that some of the programs would have been budgeted for. For instance, if we look at the IT and also training and the communication services, I think such issues would have been budgeted for. So, but I feel a lot of violence here. So I would like to the department, why were they not considering budgeting for this program instead of utilizing the environment process? And number two, from the presentation, I've realized that the DG has raised the issue of the department adhering to the transfer payment to the SOB, transfer payment regulation to the SOB. Well, it is appreciated. But what I would like to know, do they have efficient system within the department to monitor these transfers? And do they just rely all the information that is brought forward by the SOEs to them, for instance, on a report form? Do they also conduct the site visits? And why they are not doing them? It's because of they don't have the necessary capacity or in terms of the human resources to do them. So I wanted to check that system, and they rely on the information that we received from the department. And from the report, we will acknowledge that there are bonuses that have been paid to the manager, amounting to 2.9 million. I would like to know, was that justified? If some of the SOEs not comply to the internal control management system. Why? Because there's a report that some of those people did not comply with the PLC principle. So we would like to be able to the justification on that issue. And then the last is about the high staff children, both about 85%. But that is subject to correction, but I have got that report, but I can't remember the report. So I would like to know why. What are the efficient conditions? And what are the plans that are there to care the situation by the department? Thank you very much.
Thanks, honorable member.
But before I ask the questions, maybe can I make a comment that you always insisted that the department's delegation is well represented by women. It's in fact over 50% that you always insisted. Okay, so of all the departments, so far, so questions. First on transfer payments, I recall that in our previous committee meeting, there was a decision that, well, not a decision, as we observed a situation where joint budget gets monthly report by, monthly expenditure report by from National Treasury. But we find it difficult to zoom into DPE, and we end up debating, you know, if DPE is doing its job or not, because you can't see the transfer being, how the transfer expenditure are monitored, because we see the percentage of overall expenditure by department, including the transfer. So sometimes the percentage is always obscured. So we're asking, perhaps we should also ask DPE just to see how often they submit the expenditure report of SOEs to the National Treasury, and if they're going to supply the DPE in the future. And then my last question is on the proposed funding requested for Adams School. I want to check with the department if that $260 million for the next financial year has already got commitment from National Treasury. And because if I heard correctly, that's one of the requirements for the new joint venture with the community. So now I'm wondering if you've already made commitment with community, are you assuming that you're going to get that money? And also, my other worry is that in a joint venture of this sort, like we are obviously assuming Aristotle is going to get better in this joint venture, but what if it gets worse, and how is this money going to get affected? And then also connected to Aristotle is how Aristotle's operation is going to be affected, knowing that the sea days that is working on sea mining has now down all the way to 7 days of the whole year. They can only work 7 days on the sea. And the fact that the outsourced company doing the mining outperformed the operation. Although the response we had from Alice was that the machines or the equipment are all outdated. But at the same time, we get from Alice that all the capital injection up till now is not really used to renew the equipment, but to pay up all the debt at the end that they have incurred so far. So it's not really capital recapitalization up until now. And so, yeah, I think that's just the main areas of my
question. Thanks, Honourable Member Honourable Shima.
From the Chair. Thanks for the problem for the presentation. Just a question I just want to ask, exactly two questions. One relates to the insurance budget policy statement, and the Minister of Finance, when he presented the statement in the House on Tuesday, he emphasized quite strongly the fact that all departments are going to be required to introduce cost-saving measures over the MTS period. Could you give an indication as to how does the department see itself contributing to that? What sort of measures are set for the same thing? The real question I want to get to, though, is that whilst we are always reminded that the department doesn't have a measuring power in the budget, however, the Minister of Finance continuously says that we do have the ability to influence the outcomes of the MTS. Now, if I looked at the presentation, there are a number of areas where there's additional funding required, haven't necessarily been committed or granted. But if you were to say to us as the Joint Budget Committee, you know, what would you say to us are the areas that we should be strongly emphasizing as the Joint Budget Committee, and basically from Parliament to say, look, if you have a particular area where we feel that strong emphasis needs to be placed, could you perhaps give us an indication what would those areas be? Or perhaps another way of putting the question as well, these areas where additional funding is required, what would be the ones that would be like the most critical? If you didn't get that funding, what would the impact be? Because that's the role that we can play as a policy. We can influence the ICUs. And one of the things that the Minister of Finance said to us on Tuesday, or in fact on Wednesday, was that Treasury in fact take notes of what Parliament says. So I think this is an opportunity to use through this process to say to us, this is particularly important. Thank you.
Thank you.
what the previous member has said, your capacity to absorb and implement over this term. I noted, Honorable Khalan.
Thank you very much, Minister Dugin. Only one question. That has in terms of the MKBPF, whether the proposed allocation are in line with your policy priorities going forward. The second one, that's for my own curiosity and interest. I've seen that you're talking about a township establishment. Why was this? It does not have a relationship to MTV, but I think something that I'm very much personally interested in the record.
Thank you, Honorable Member, Honorable Fa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I must say, if the department plays a critical role in part of the economy, and it was with interest then that one heard about the direct address by the department on the previous blockages we've had in supplies and so on, and that now there are measures in place. So I'm saying thank you very much there, and I'm sure the portfolio committee will want to learn a little bit more about that. But some of the questions that I'm having here is perhaps a little in the light of special adjustments that have been made and the critical state-owned enterprises that fall under you, such as energy, transport, defence and the like. I'm thinking in terms of the NEL in particular. Now, more recently, during the special adjustments, we were given what I thought was a rather clear position, and somewhat after that, just in the last week, we heard though about the reliance on the NEL, on the defence, for their munitions, the orders of their munitions. And that this reliance, now what has happened is that because of lower than expected orders from the department, this has resulted, or would be leading, to the potential insolvency of that particular section of the NEL. Now, can we expect, or perhaps it's the wrong choice of words to say expect, but clearly these are the sort of risks that the NEL would hopefully have factored in. Or are we asking too much for the NEL to say, study ahead, have a more robust relationship with your potential partners, other defence and so on, to keep a far more sound ear open, if you like, to what is happening. Because for that amount of money to find itself in the wrong direction, I think becomes a problem to the portfolio, to the JDC. The other area, though, that is also of concern, and that was mentioned earlier this year during the budget processes, and again has come out from the Minister of Treasury, National Treasury, is that departments have been asked very much to see where they can trim down and rely on more efficient methods. And part of these efficient methods would be to become more creative and also to develop risk management plans. I'm coming back to that particular one. And to develop sounder projections and to become more competitive. Now the question is, because we're relying to some extent on the NEL to export, what assurance can you give the committee that you are exploring ways of raising our competitiveness in this area? Can you give us some idea of what measures you are taking in the next 3 years? Thanks, Honourable Member. Catching the fruit seems to be very important because this is the second member of the reading. Honourable King.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
joined the Journal of the Minister in the district for their presentation. Looking at the issue of general recapitalization, which means 231 freedom rate. Let us know what the present building, what is it that's going to be done with them when they say they're going to move to new facilities. And then there is a big process address. What is going to happen to that? Is it being sold perhaps to get money for them? Which would mean perhaps that this time the 7 million will need a little addition to what would be obtained when the present building is sold. The other one, the South African Express recapitalization, looking at perhaps the areas in South Africa that may use our regional transport from the plane section. And the crime related to the road transport, would it be enough also for the line that is needed? I'm looking at the northern state with the differences between the towns which are really need air transport. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Member. I'm also looking at the other members from the portfolio committee. You are free to ask questions. If you have questions, you are free to ask questions. Any member of parliament is allowed to ask a question. The Honorable Colony.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm looking at program 2, energy sector, where you tell us that you find the need to construct phases of construction so that they can make a special case. Haven't you done that? Because there is an estimated cost that you made there. But that is leading me. That approach is leading me to ask you the question on dynamic recapitalization, where you say also we have not budgeted for the structural cost. And you further say further costs could also materialize. Now, the question I have there, you don't even have an estimation like you had there previously on program 2. Why do you want it? Somewhere you have an estimation, somewhere you have it. Thank you.
Honorable Member, Honorable Co-Chair.
On the monitoring of some of the SOEs, the presentation tells us that it is the intention to wind down some of the SOEs, or part of them, that the Komatinen Forest. Doesn't this present some kind of a loss of opportunity? And therefore, in a way, an unfulfilled policy intention. A further concern on this matter is the effect that South Coast operation would have on the economy side. Here I'm thinking of the frequent forest fires that are in a way leading to extinction of the whole forest plantation, especially in the area of Mpumalanga. And this presents itself to few job losses and may exacerbate the problem of scarcity of building materials. What is it that we are doing, especially in replenishing the loss plantation of forestry? Yes. It is in my view that we one. A deep flow is replanting some of the forest, and therefore job losses may become permanent in those areas. And that would have an effect on the economy. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, honorable member. I think on the one of the performance bonus, I would also want to check ADG. There is this nation in the department because of the high question of what could be the problem or the challenges, and what measures do you have in place for retention of these people who are resigning? Not necessarily the ones whose contracts are expiring and the ones who are dismissed, but the ones who are resigning. What could be the challenges? And what impact does it have on your operation? The other one is on, do you have any oversight responsibility over performance bonuses that are paid by the SOB? And if there is, what outcome? Can you just do this committee? What happens? The other one is on, I'm just making additional questions. Let me quickly check. I think Honorable Dambuza asked about your oversight function, monitoring whether if you do site visits. And if you do site visits, I would ask you to elaborate whether you have an idea, like you say, that you don't receive monthly savings of those. So what happens? Do you rely on information that comes from there? Or do you go there and check and see what it is? And I'm asking these questions because in some instances, like FAA, we have problems at Parliament about what is happening in FAA. I will take, if there are follow-up questions later, I will take them up, but for now let's take these ones, and we are left with 30 minutes before the session ends. I've sort of for my oversight, I forgot to introduce the delegates from the National Treasury. We've got Ian Scar, the Director of Economic Services. We also have Daniel Ngwanga, who is intergovernmental policy planning. Oh, still coming. Okay. We have Lisenze Raiseledi, who directs development finance. And we call National Treasury that we're part of this hearing so that way we are dissatisfied with your responses. We could send those questions to National Treasury and respond to them on the spot. DG, you are welcome. You and the minister,
whoever comes. Thank you, Chair. I think it would be appropriate to deal with some of the more policy-orientated questions first, and the DG and their team can add to that and also deal with the details. Let me first, the first issue that came up from Honorable Dambuza was this question of monitoring and site visits, if I summarize. I think it would be appropriate for us to spell out once again the basic governance structure of the SOE, because I think that will help clarify the precise role each of us has to play and what must be done. I think the first and foremost point is that these state enterprises are companies. So that the provisions of the company law plus those of the Public Finance Management Act apply to them. And that means that the legal responsibility for the company lies with the board. It's the board that is responsible for the oversight and running of that company. Our function in terms of that law is exactly the equivalent of a shareholder in the private sector. The difference, however, is that as a shareholder, we conduct ourselves in a particular way. We set out for the board in the shareholder compact a pretty precise set of objectives that we want to achieve. I think you're familiar with those shareholder compacts. They have changed in the last 3 years and are more precise and are shorter. Essentially, the shareholder compact would deal with the following areas. It deals directly with certain financial ratios. That could be profit, rate of return on assets, the other ratios that we use relating to the efficiency of the use of cash and capital. And we adjust those according to the circumstances. For example, as we'll come to later, we would not expect Danel to make a profit, so we set other objectives that it has to achieve to work towards a profit. The second area that we deal with are very specific issues. In the case of Transnet, Eskom, and several better for the media, these relate to specific investments that they must undertake. The expansion of Cape Town Port or Durban Port, we set these out. This is the investment program that we expect them to undertake. In the case of Danel and SAA, the objectives tend to relate far more to the actual actions of restructuring that we expect, and we will spell some of those out. The third main area is on efficiency, where we try and establish credible and reasonable benchmarks of performance, like the efficiency of a port operation or the number of breakdowns or availability of the system in Eskom. So these are spelled out in three issues, and we find that shareholder compact with the board at the formal signing ceremony. The board then are judged by us as to whether the enterprise achieved the shareholder compact objective. And they must then also ensure that the financial statements are in order. They must comply increasingly with international financial reporting standards. And they have, I mean, Eskom and Transnet are two of the largest companies in South Africa. So they have massive accounting sections, treasury, auditors, internal auditors. And frankly, it would be absolutely impossible for a small department like us to deal with the detail of these companies. So we don't depend. We rely on the law that these are companies that must follow procedures, both in TSMA and company law. And what we've developed, as I think the DG spells out, and she can deal with it in more detail later, the task of DGD is to ensure that the enterprise does comply with TSMA, comply with the TSMA requirements in terms of its corporate plan, the shareholder compact, has it put in place procedures that are required by the TSMA. What we've been developing more effectively then is to look at risk management, which I think I'll come to us and then come as an answer to this. To look at risk management issues. Now the board also, in terms of the compact and in terms of the law, must develop risk management and auditing procedures. And we would check that those are there that we've placed them. So we would not attempt to become another auditing function over and above what already exists in the enterprise. It's impractical. It's also unwise from a government point of view, because then you can't hold the board accountable. If you put the checking, then and you didn't find the mistake, they say, well, you checked. So really it is essential from a government point of view that management must be held accountable, the board holds them accountable, and we hold the board accountable for the achievement of the shareholder compact. To the extent that we identify risks in any way, we obviously would then look for a mechanism to intervene and double check and see what's happened. So we do attempt to visit as many of the SAE operations as possible, but this is more to be part of understanding what they're doing, to see that we are improving our efficiency and involving with them. So I think that the system is a very comprehensive and large one. The amount of information that we get from the SOE is very considerable. And I should just say, as Minister, I think we've made dramatic improvements in the reports I get on a quarterly basis, where my team analyzes the reports from the company, from the SOE, and we can then assess what it looks like, where it's going. As the DG indicated, if there's a problem that we see emerging, I would then hold a formal meeting with the chairperson and the chief executive and the DG. We would ask them to come in and we would record what issues we are raising and why we're raising them. And I make that point, honourable members, because I think it's very important that as a shareholder we record the issues that we want to come to the zoo. We can't have a situation where I phone with the chief executive and say, please do this, and then there's a dispute about it afterwards. So definitely if there's something of a significant or material nature, it's put in writing. So that you have a proper record that's been in fairness to the management, in fairness to the board, and in fairness to ourselves. If it's not in writing, it means you're not raising it seriously. It's just a discussion. So I hope that gives some insight of 2 points. We are not in a position, we should not try and be in a position to do everything the SOE is doing. These are massive, massive companies. What we have to make sure is that they are following the right procedures and that we've got some risk management system that point out to us where the risk may lie. I hope that helps a little bit. Let me deal also with this very important issue of bonuses and salaries. I mean, this is a very contentious matter for all of us. Because these are state enterprises, I think there's a far greater focus on the salary structures and what bonuses may be achieved. In view of this, we started 3 years back, very early in the new administration, we began to develop some realistic and principled guidelines on the salary structures of chief executives and of the executive management, and on the structures of remuneration to the board. These boards, as you know, we take the board very seriously indeed. We see them as the senior boards in the South African economy, because these are very big economies, very big companies. We had to deal with quite a number of differences in how these big companies have been paying their executives. But we developed a year ago, more than a year maybe, a guideline, which we operated from a practical point of view. And a few weeks back, 2 or 3 weeks back, we've taken these guidelines to the cabinet. I'll indicate roughly what they are in a moment. And these guidelines, the cabinet's agreed that have approved the guidelines. The reason we have not dealt with them more publicly, which we will begin doing in the foreseeable future, is just that it was necessary to compare the guidelines developed by GTE with some of the other state enterprises that are not reporting to GTE. We're having a look at how they would compare with some very important work being done in the Public Service Administration about possible guidelines for very senior personnel in the state sector. But if I can summarize what they are, essentially we have established as a guideline system where we rank our companies by size and turnover. So we have the largest companies. We put in certain factors like the degree of competition that the business might be faced. Competitive or market situation of an Eskom is very different to the competitive or market situation of an SAA. We take into account some of these things. We look at the turnover, the asset value, the complexity, and we then essentially create the large category of state enterprises, the medium category of state enterprises, and the lower or smaller category of state enterprises. We then get a market survey, a very detailed one, and that's not always a perfect exercise because there's only one or two other companies in South Africa the size of Eskom. Maybe there's none of them. Might not be any. So it's hard to find what the comparisons are. And basically, my own view is that the market comparison method discriminates against the big Eskom, Transnet, and SAA. But nonetheless, we've done that, and we established a median, so we, as a policy point of view, our view is that the senior executives of these very, very important companies should be rewarded in the upper half of the remuneration system. And we then establish what is the 50th percent, i.e. the average, what is the 75% third quartile, and what would be a 90%, what some of the highest salaries. And the board then make an adjudication, a recommendation to us where they locate the executive. If they want to locate the executive above the average and closer to the 75%, they must indicate why they want to do that. Is it experience, difficulty of getting people in that position? What is it? And the board will give that thought and make a determination on that. We want to clarify our central payment system. Essentially, there are three components to the payment system for a senior executive. The first would be what's called a cost to company package. This is essentially your basic plus other benefits which are arranged in negotiation between the executive and the board. This is common practice in the marketplace. The second component would be the performance, annual performance. Now that's a formula that has to be linked to the shareholder compact. So the KPIs that we've asked the board to achieve, the board must take those KPIs and translate it into what they demand of the chief executive. And they would then design, because the other chief executives must have bonus systems that are compatible with and in the same mold as your chief executive. And all of the companies have done that now, and they've done it in slightly different ways, sometimes with the history of Eskom being different than the history of Frontex. But we're comfortable that a bonus system has been put in place. The third component is a long-term bonus. I'm sure many of you are familiar with what happens in the private sector. Executives often get share options or various other kinds of bonus. Now, we're saying that the bonus for a state enterprise executive would be paid in cash, and it's a formula, a long-term bonus linked to the shareholder compact, KPI, and we will do a presentation to our own portfolio committee in the near future to give you a bit more insight into the form of vesting and rolling bonus. This is fairly common in the marketplace, but the main difference would be these are not share options, these are cash bonuses based on performance. Now, in general, you would not get a bonus if there's not been a profit. And it's not just the profit that's measured, there's a number of other measures you've got. Both Eskom and Transnet have introduced, and we favor this idea, they introduce what are called gatekeepers. But to give you an example, in Eskom you can make a good profit in the year, you can do very well, but if the system has been down for longer than your performance, then you don't get the bonus. In Transnet they put in a certain other, it's more complex in Transnet because you've got different facilities. These are, we're comfortable, are very sophisticated and I think very fair bonus system. In a case like Danel, as I indicated earlier, if the executives achieve some of the most important restructuring objectives. So there may not have been a profit, but we were moving the company towards profitability. And in those cases, because they've met what was required from them in that year, the bonus comes in. Now the bonus only comes in if you've gone above what you expected. It doesn't come in just because you've done what the job is for the bonus. So that's a long answer, but I think it's very important to get some kind of comparability on wages and to establish a common bonus and remuneration system, which we've now done. And I would certainly take full responsibility for the executive been giving bonuses on recommendation of the board because I'm comfortable that the procedure has been thorough and good. Obviously, the low bonuses per se are more complex. One of the issues that often arises, and some of the honourable members may remember this, in the different divisions of Transnet, one division did very well once. It did fantastic profit. The company as a whole in 2004 made a loss. Now, contractually, that division was entitled to a bonus, and the board overruled them, and it caused a lot of tension. But generally speaking, I'm just alerting you to the fact that bonuses would usually be part of a manager's contract, and if they meet their contractual obligations, they are entitled to that bonus. And that may not apply to the chief executive, but it might apply to managers below. So, these bonuses are complex, but in summary, Chair and members, we believe we have developed an acceptable and realistic and fair remuneration guidelines and bonus guidelines, and we will publicize those in the near future after the consultation I mentioned is completed. Let me very briefly deal with the prospects of Alice Court. There's some other issues that the department will deal with. This has been an exceptionally difficult situation to manage. Our problem in Alice Court has been that in the absence of a legal settlement with the community, it was not possible to fund Alice Court. We had a very difficult task. We had to prevent it from going bankrupt because that would have been prejudicial to the community. But we couldn't fund it heavily because we were not sure what the outcome would be. Stated very practically, you can look at it in this way. Let us say that we have been unable to reach an agreement with the community. The state would have then either had to decide to keep Alex Corp as a going company and continue the legal battle. Now, practically speaking, those, I'm sure members of the Public Enterprise Portfolio Committee are familiar with this. In practice, we couldn't do that. Because every time we tried to open a new mining activity, the community interdicted us and said, no, no, you're doing something that might not be in our long-term interest. So, in fact, Alex Court did so. There was very nothing we could do. We're very excited, both the community and government and everybody are very excited by the settlement, because now we can start mining again. We can start mining again. This will be done through the mechanism of the pooled and shared joint venture, which is a partnership with the community, and I won't go into all the detail of this rather complex but very important settlement. On issues like the sea day, with the equipment that Alex Corp has, you can't going to sea. What Alex Corp uses for sea mining is divers. This is very, very dangerous activity. This is specialized air diving, and you're going into the ocean, down to 20 feet, and there are waves washing around, there's currents that could snag your lines, and you use a big vacuum cleaner, if you like. You go under the sea, and you go with a vacuum cleaner looking, sucking up the sand which comes to a machine at the top. Now obviously in rough sea it's absolutely impossible for a diver to go in. The divers are working awfully, sure. The second range of divers is boats that are going, small boats going out. If the sea is too rough, they can't handle it, it's too dangerous. They're too close to the shore, they can get wrecked. So to exploit the sea potential, marine diamond potential, we will do it in the PSJV. And the other very important development at Alex Corp, which I should indicate as a matter of policy, and you would have seen this, the Department of Mineral and Energy negotiated an agreement with Cabiers. And currently the DG and the deputy DG candidates here are leading a negotiation with Cabiers, with the full knowledge of the community, we keep them informed. And the possibility of establishing a larger company on the Namakwa coast. If we did that, we would be able to pool the equipment between the beers and ourselves, and that would lead to more successful mining. So we're optimistic. We're optimistic. People familiar with the agreement will know that there's a very detailed mining plan that has to be developed. But if for some or other reason, divine forces put no diamonds where we think there should be diamonds, we will have a problem. That's the risk we take. But we're very optimistic about it, and I want to again pay my respect to some remarkable community leaders. And we're moving very quickly to carry out the settlement. Honourable Member, we public enterprise should be...
I'm getting worried that we are issuing it for the DG's time of response.
I will be quicker then. We're establishing a township because this mine was, there was no township. So we have to establish the township, and the state has agreed to pay for that and need to use the instrument to do that. So, dealing with your question there very quickly. Yes. what is critical, if I may very quickly, let me say that DTE and the capitalization of the state enterprises poses very big problems for government as a whole and for the Treasury in particular. Our requests are without any doubt very disruptive for the Treasury, and as a result, quite understandably, quite unpopular. Because they classic capitalization questions, which in the private sector you don't worry about budget cycles, you make a decision, can we get the capital, should we put the capital in? But this has caused a lot of heartache between the departments, and it's a problem government has to address. Because capitalization of these entities, it's not appropriate to deal with it in normal budgeting processes, the argument that we would put forward time and again. A classic example is Pebblebed. Pebblebed is a very brave undertaking by a small country. If it succeeds, it will be a great achievement. But it's risky. So to conceive of this in the same way as ordinary budgeting for a department is possible. As the DG indicated, the 14 billion is the cost of building the first demonstrator net of various other revenues that may come in. It is the worst case scenario. We would not like to see a situation at all where the state has to pay that 14 billion. Our target, which is now the one agreed, is that the 6 billion that the Treasury has talked about, plus about 2 to 3 billion previously contributed by the state, will be the state contribution. The other state component to this table bed will be Eskom, the IDC. Those are essentially other possible state components to this. Our objective is to try and ensure that the state-owned South Africa, as the public sector, owns more than 50% of the project in order to keep the benefits in South Africa as much as we can. And we are negotiating, as the public knowledge, with Sasol and one or two other large South African companies to keep the South African footprint of this thing. As the DG indicated, we'd like to conclude these negotiations before the end of this year. And I think that will then give us clarity on what the after years will really look like. And for us, that's one of the really big ones. The other capitalizations are important. They differ now. The NEL, I think, is the most important one to be faced in. We would argue that InfraCo is still an important capitalization. But it does present these problems that I've indicated, and there is within government a lot of discussion how we mitigate some of the real difficulties of budgeting that emerge from this capitalization. So this is the first time in the democratic country's history that we've actually capitalized state enterprises in the last few years. And it's raised a lot of problems. There are other issues that you are questioning that I can stop. Okay. Very interesting question. On TAPCO, let me just touch on TAPCO. The decision was taken in 1998 that we should privatize this forest. That has been done with the exception of Komati Land Forest, where the Competition Commission overruled the deal for a range of reasons. We spent a year looking at whether your points were valid, should we, is there a strategic need for this? We came to the conclusion that we should sell KLS, which we are in the process of trying to do. But our target is to only complete that in 2009. With regard to the burnt forest, we are beginning to reforest, but our first priority was to cut down the burnt trees. If we had left them too long into the rain, they would have rotted and would have wasted a lot of money. So priority one was to cut the trees, and they're planting now again, if we had to cut the trees. I think it is the correct policy decision that we privatize it, and I should stress that the lease agreements, remember we don't privatize the land, and that the lease agreements imposed by the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry will set certain conditions as to how the timber will be used, because your point is correct. an important source of what's called saw logs, which are used for the construction industry. That holds a very valuable asset, and the lease agreement will indicate that they must stay in that sector. Sorry, take so long, Jim. She's very fond of me.
Thanks, Willis.
Thank
you. But I thought a lot of the issues that are around this policy, you only remember of which part of the budget of the items that we reflected do we really, really want. So we want every single one of them. What we did, and just a straight honest example, we want every single one of them. But what we also did on a serious note is when we had put in our initial allocation to National Treasury, there had been a discussion with the whole economic cluster. And as the economic cluster, we sat together and decided how we would look at reprioritizing within our own individual departments so that we would then reduce the amount that we were asking for. So what you'll find is that what the department asked for was cut down quite significantly. And we've stayed pretty much with most of the forecast of what some of the SOEs required, but also in certain instances quite dramatically, cut quite dramatically some of the funding that was required by the SOEs. The environment rule, to get back to the honourable member's question around environment, will it exceed the 8%? I think, a timing issue that we realistically have to deal with. Budgeting in government begins around July of this year for how we're going to spend money from April next year. With the best foresight, you can't be as accurate around exactly what it is that you will do in which section. What we do, and that's why there's always a difference between what's in the EME and what we actually eventually deliver, is that around March, we then have a business planning session, because then that's when we're signing off. We've reviewed the previous year. What are the things that we said we would do? Are they done? That which we didn't do, are we going to continue to do it? Or something happened in the year, because often that's what happens as well. Something happens in the course of the year that we end up not doing a particular activity. That's how we would then reprioritize our budget festival. Secondly, in line with the question that you raised around efficiency and cost saving in the department, there's always been a key driver on our side that whatever we do, we must be able to defend the expenditure that is related to ourselves. So one of the areas and that was related to why IT and communications. Previously, these funds were located in all of the other programs. We've basically collated this money located in one unit in administration so that we're able to make sure that we actually are able to achieve efficiencies and cost benefits from volume when you procure. And that's the same would go for IT. And IT particularly tends to be quite big. If you separate IT too much, you could end up with a department with 4 5 systems that don't speak to each other, and hence the consolidation of IT in one body. We always make sure that we stay within the 8% requirement. What we've done to try and make sure that we spend at least the money that relates to accommodation, transport, entertainment, and the rest of the life in an efficient or in a way that is not wasteful, let's put it that way. In the Cape, the place that we all come to is Cape Town, and whenever we come to Cape Town, it's also Cape Town, you would know, is probably one of the most expensive cities in South Africa to stay in when it comes to accommodation. It doesn't matter what grading of a hotel a person is staying in. And frankly, because the civil service doesn't need to stay in the same day, one hotel as well. So whenever you try and stay in, and the standard is probably a grade 3 hotel, in Cape Town most of them are over R1,000. Or you really like close to 950 in the rating line. So what we try to do is to get a great arrangement with particular hotels. But particular hotels, they'll take an arrangement on condition that you book a room for the year, irrespective of whether you're using the rooms or not. So there is a risk on the forecast side, because we don't know when you will be in Cape Town necessarily. So we try and all of those things. The other element which we've also indicated is we try, and one of the things that we've spent a hell of a lot of money on tickets is if we were able to do internet bookings ourselves directly. But that means that you have a diamond club that you can lodge and that you pay virtually as and when you go along. So quite a lot of these things we've tried to implement in the department so that we would save significantly on those sides and just have a rational internal travel policy. For example, if it's a one-hour flight, we all, including myself, fly economy. There's no benefit to sitting in business class right now. So there's quite a lot of these things that we've done. I just want to quickly go through. The Minister has indicated that in as far as reporting by SOEs, the process that we go by, but also of the consular reports that we get, we would get them post being approved. And in certain instances, when we get it in advance, we understand that it's a holding consular report, post being approved by the audit committee of that enterprise, given the fact that they are accountable for the financials of that company. So by the time we put that report to the minister, it's a report based on financials that have been approved by the audit committee of the SOE. And obviously audited, get audited by the AG, and that's how we make sure that the issues will be covered appropriately. The question around, and I'm just not sure what would have gone wrong with that data, around turnaround of the department, we always come back to it. I'm grateful, Madam Chair, that you recognize that there's some, as we've always said, DPE was a department, is one of the few departments where virtually every single senior member of staff was on contract. And most of the people were on 3-year contracts. We recently revised them from 3-year to 5-year contracts. About a year or two ago, we revised them to 5-year contracts. So there are normal contract terminations. And when a contract terminates, we always ask the question, do we still need the post? If yes, then we either opt to retain the person or we advertise the job if necessary. Secondly, if there are a few people in the department, which I think is wonderful, who've been given job offers where they get a director position if they're the executive director. Now, sometimes you have a director position, but sometimes you don't. And you recall that because of the size of the department, about 165 or whatever, there are certain numbers of posts that you can have in particular areas, and there are certain posts that you just can't have. So, try to mind, you want to retain a person. You can't offer them a director position because the establishment is a particular establishment. So there are some of those those issues. But there are also situations where in certain areas you actually, and so I know that one of the members was raising concern about the size, in certain areas you have to trim it down because in government generally when you come in, you find in admin they tend to be heavier than on the line side. So you have to reduce that level. One of the steps that we've been tracking now is if a vacancy exists in a unit, how long has it existed? And then you try and then find out why has it existed for such a long time. There's, for example, one position which I think we've got probably vacant for a year, and that was a director who's a rare expert. They're not around in South Africa, at the very least, not at the price that we offer at UTE for a director salary. And we have tried virtually everything. We've advertised this, we've headhunted, and then you eventually come back at the point that if you wait to get a director raise, you will never get a director raise, let's put it that way. You end up having to go for a chief director raise in the department, which means you take two jobs and you've got to find two jobs that you will collapse into one because you've got to create the money from within the department. So there's quite a lot of these kinds of complexities. And some of the people will leave the department because they've achieved excellent experience. I mean, working in DPE is the type of experience that you're not going to get in the market. Nobody in the market works where they move from restructuring, reviewing a restructuring of the company, to analyzing the company on a regular basis, and then sitting down and trying to see where are those opportunities. If they become the kind of marketable people that are not often available. So invariably, most people who leave the department would end up being in much higher positions wherever they locate themselves. As I said to you today, as we're sitting, the vacancy rate is 11%. And so if the vacancy rate is 11% compared to where we come from, I think we are actually starting to deal very much with all of those issues. Bearing in mind that you never need to get to zero at a zero turnover, and some turnover, frankly, is necessary as well. And as I say, bringing in these young interns, one of the things that we've been talking about is, can we not start creating some deputy director level positions? And that's a challenging question on its own. When you create these deputy director level positions, you can't also continue, because at some point you have to stop. You bring in those young kids, who are some of them really, very good, who you'd like to absorb. But next year there's another bunch who are actually going to be as good as the ones that you got this year. And you can't do this beyond a certain allowable limit. One of the questions that was also asked was around performance bonuses for the department. As the department, we put together business plan, we put together staff plan. We also do quarterly and monthly and 6-monthly reviews, both of how far we've implemented and what it is that we've done. So that at the end of the year, we are able to then do a performance assessment of the agreement, irrespective of level. And it's on the back of these, really, that we would give bonuses to all staff. And what we've started doing is, for the last 2 years, we've actually asked an outsider to also do an assessment of the department just based on the things that we said we would do and review that, so that there is some sense of accountability. And actually, there is some outside, other than the audit committee, which would also review the reports that we would do on a monthly basis. We quarterly submit not only ourselves, but to the department on the absorption basis. Monthly reports are submitted to the National Treasury on spend by the department. A monthly report is also submitted to the executive strategy on spend within the department. So all of those requirements we meet. The honourable member asked the question around the budget for energy, for the energy unit. That budget, consultant costs are quite high in South Africa. It wouldn't be for a consultant to come and be in the department for a long period of time. More often than not, we just need somebody with experience in developing a forecasting model of one sort or the other. So it's the development cost of the forecasting model, which they then give to us, and then we would then work on it. And we work with the consultants in doing that. Now, because you can't spend money that you haven't got, we have to estimate, given previous work, what it is it would cost us. So that's why you would have an estimate in the one instance. In the case of Denel, which indicated the 5.1 billion that they requested, we have always said that that wasn't the assumption that we are able to turn around all of these various divisions. Having been given 3.5 billion rand, there are some costs which would have been in the 5.1 billion that would not have been covered, first of all, which arise firstly. Secondly, what with the same strategy, industry strategy, we indicated that would give us the final restructuring cost of the mill, because the other activities would then be the activities that we would shut down and basically business. And I think it was the time soon with the question around the relationship between DOD and munitions and the mill. That is an area that we reviewed, and in the review, we had arrived at the conclusion that it was not strategic, and so effectively, if you hadn't been capitalized appropriately, you either sell or shut down. However, the OU came back and said that that's an area that was strategic to its operations. On the back of that, we then approached the OU and said, fine, to retain it as a strategic operation, what you need to give us certainty on is there's a flow of orders for a period of time so that we then design an organization that meets that size. Now, designing an organization is about critical mass. And then on the back of that, we then have indicated the minimum amount. We're hoping that in the negotiations and discussions with the DOD, they would approve a partnership, a joint venture, because that's one of the other ways that we ensure that it's able to export, because then that reduces the dependence on the DOD directly. It's a joint venture that if they approve on munitions is then rescued going forward. Some personalization is required, but it becomes then part of the global group and therefore has export possibilities. Chair, I'm mindful of the time.
Yeah.
I hope that I've covered all of the other manuals.
I would request, because of time, Chris, that if there are questions that you haven't responded to, membership just quickly indicate, and I will ask you, DJ, to respond in writing, and today we're finishing with the public hearing. So if at least by Monday, 12 o'clock, if you could have responded so that we can, because we're starting with our report on Monday, so at least by 12 o'clock. Can I just remember, can you just indicate which of the questions have not been responded to? Honorable Fox?
Thank you, Chair. The question I asked about the now only the one side of it, risk management in general, was tackled. But the precise question relating to the potential, insolvency of the munitions department, which one hears was about a 30%, so a third of the total turnover at the end of the last financial year, which employs close on 50% of the employees of Genel. What plans have you got to address that in terms of the risk management trust that you put in? How can we expect to see this move on? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My question related to the recapitalization of Genel. And in particular, I'm interested in the unit that was dealing with the dispossession of guns. And then the other one related to the South African Express, we are going to have regional names to consider the amount that they've budgeted, 404 million rand, because I think the chance is quite big, taking into account the high ratings of vehicles on the road, and then the extent of the distance between some towns in Northern Cape, where in other places also there are the aircraft should be renewed because they were there before.
Chair, look, let me smart on this one, just smartly, with respect of the township establishment, just to say, PG, advice from a young man, whether they would not want to consider, whether they would want to, in that the partnership is useful in the exciting measure, and therefore consider talking, for instance, there is a new grant, at National Treasure. It is said that something called Neighborhood Development Grant, which is growing in the MTF. And then there's also a new initiative by the DBSA called the Sustainable Development, Sustainable Community. And also a broader a partnership involving DME, DWARF, with respect of infrastructure. Provincial departments, health, roads, education, etc. So that as you engage, because already they've got 60 million, but then there could be, these other departments could also leverage in terms of ensuring a proper, sustainable community that is developed there. I'm just saying, this is something that there was some engagement that they might want to engage with. Thank you.
Thanks, Department of Public Enterprises. Thank you, Minister. We are pressurized by time. So we are breaking for, I don't even want to give time. I'm going to pick up our tea and come back. I'm not giving you time, not even 5 minutes. Let's pick up tea and come back. Thank you very much, Sergeant. We expect 12 o'clock Monday. Thank you.